Hi, Dr. Artella.
Hi, Nia.
I have a question. I heard today that sometimes prosecutors can't use evidence in a case. Is that true?
Yes, it is. And it's called the exclusionary rule.
That sounds kind of counterproductive to justice. Am I going to like this exclusionary rule?
I think in the end you will. But the point you make is one that those who oppose the rule make a great deal.
Well, then how do we get this rule?
Well, we need to go back in your DeLorean to the year 1911.
I love my DeLorean. But 1911, that's a pretty good while ago.
Yes, and at that time, it's illegal to mail lottery tickets across state lines under the federal code.
Really? Lotteries are everywhere.
Now they are, but at that time, they were viewed as gambling. And gambling was very illegal at that point.
Okay. Well, gambling is still illegal in a lot of places, so that makes sense. So who got into trouble mailing lottery tickets? I mean, allegedly, right? Allegedly mailing lottery tickets, because I know I'm dealing with an attorney at law, and everything is alleged.
Fremont Weeks was suspected of mailing lottery tickets and was arrested at his workplace without a warrant. The police proceeded to search his office.
Okay, so he objected to that search.
Well, the police didn't find anything there. So when they didn't find anything, they then proceeded to go out to his house. And his neighbor very kindly told the police officers where to find the key to get into Weeks's home.
Oh, okay, wait a minute. So the police walk up and the neighbor's like, oh, I know where he keeps the key. He keeps it here under this rock next to this toad. Here, let me help you get in. Because that's always a good idea, just letting the police officers in somebody's house. Is that kind of pretty much how that went?
I have a feeling that's exactly how it went. And that tells you, you need to be very careful as to who do you trust with those kinds of details.
No kidding. Oh, man. Okay, so what'd the police find?
So they found papers and articles, which they then turned over to the federal marshals.
Because it's an interstate crime. They have to go with the federal marshals.
That is correct.
Okay, so they found evidence against him. So what happens next?
Well, then the police returned later that same day with the marshal, who thought that he could find more evidence if he looked. This time, the police were let into the property by a boarder when they knocked on the door.
Good gravy. Everybody in the world is letting them into this guy's house. Golly.
Not only did the boarder let them in, the boarder said, his bedroom's over there.
With friends like these, you don't need enemies.
Exactly. So the marshal goes in and he goes through everything, including a cupboard. And in the cupboard, he seizes letters and envelopes related to the lottery.
Okay, poor Weeks, man. He just cannot trust anybody. So I assume they had a warrant, though, when they went back, right?
They did not, which is what Weeks objected to. He motioned the trial court to have his property returned to him since it was seized without a warrant and that these items could not be used against him in the court.
Okay, so what did the judge do?
He allowed the evidence to be used by the prosecution and Weeks was subsequently convicted.
Wait a minute. No. I'm confused. How did the trial court allow that?
Well, under common law, and for the first century of the Constitution's existence, evidence unlawfully seized by government officers was nonetheless admissible as evidence.
Now, see, I don't even understand. Why would they allow that?
Well, you need to ask yourself, how reliable is this information? It's documents. The documents do not change whether they are seized with a warrant or not seized with a warrant, which is very different than, say, a coerced confession. If you coerce a confession, we know those are not reliable. That's why we don't allow them
in. Yeah, I had to beat that confession out of you. That's probably not a good thing.
That is not a good thing. Right.
Okay, so I can see that, but it still doesn't seem right.
And then you have the concern that you have these documents that show this person is guilty. You're going to let this guilty person walk out the door?
Okay, all right, that's a fair, I can see that. Okay, well then how do we get to the exclusionary rule?
Weeks' attorney appealed to the Supreme Court, and in 1914, they agreed to hear the case.
Okay, so what'd they decide?
In a unanimous decision, the court held the seizure of the items from his residence directly violated his constitutional rights.
Okay, so they agreed with me.
The court also held that the government's refusal to return Weeks's possessions violated the Fourth Amendment.
All right, so now we're getting somewhere.
The justices then ruled that the illegally seized evidence was fruit of the poisonous tree, and therefore it could not be used in federal court.
So how did they get there when you said that the common law was saying something different?
At this point, the court recognized that without some means to deter illegal government conduct, the Fourth Amendment becomes mere words on paper without any true value.
I would agree with that. I mean, you would need to curb sort of the worst impulses of government officials, I suppose.
And the court reasoned that if they allowed police and prosecution to use this illegally obtained evidence, it would simply encourage more law-breaking behavior.
Yeah.
And thus they created the exclusionary rule that applied exclusively to federal officials.
Why did it only apply to federal law officials?
This was a federal case, and it was based exclusively on the Fourth Amendment.
Okay, so what about state police actions?
The court addresses that much later in the 1960s, and we're going to discuss that later.
Okay. So can you brief the case for us?
Certainly. Fremont Weeks was arrested without a warrant at his work. The police went to his home without a warrant, and a neighbor kindly let them in. The police seized some papers and provided them to the marshals. The police, with the marshal, returned to the home later that day for a second search. This time, a boarder let them into the home and showed them to Weeks' bedroom. The marshal seized more papers and personal items. At trial, Mr. Weeks asked to have all property returned to him and not be used against him at trial, as the police did not have a search warrant. The trial judge denied his motion and convicted him. Weeks appealed to the Supreme Court. The court had two issues in front of them: whether it is legal for the federal agent to conduct an unwarranted search and seizure of a person's home, and if it is illegally obtained evidence can be used against someone in court. The court, in a unanimous decision, found that the seized items from Weeks' residence directly violated his constitutional rights. The court also held that the government's refusal to return his possessions violated his Fourth Amendment. The court created the exclusionary rule to prevent prosecution to use any illegally obtained evidence to use against to convict a defendant. So, what do you think of the exclusionary rule now?
I like it.
I thought you might.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, that's good.